We are holding in Demai in the sixth parak near the end. We got to finish by tomorrow. As Hashem make it, it's going to be rough. And we're holding in Mishnah Ches, and we're not going to rush it. So we need a miracle. Okay, so Mishnah Ches is like this. It's really a continuation of the same kind of themes before. You have a partnership here. You have Shnaim Shekiblu Sada Barisus. You have two guys who were makabel to work a field in partnership as sharecroppers. They have a partnership in the field. Oh, Sheyarshu, or a totally different case, but they're partners in as much as two brothers inherited the field from their father. Oh, Shenishtatfu, or just a regular old business partnership. Two guys get together and buy a field. It's all the same. The point is they're partners in the field. Now, Yachol Hu Lomar, one of them could say, if he wants to, Tol Ata Chitim, you take the Chitim Shebemakom Ploni, that's in that part of the field. Ploni is, you know, a variable, fill in the blank, yeah. B'makom ploni, whatever, you know, such and such a place. V'ani chitim shebemakom ploni, and I get the chitim in such and such a place. Okay? So basically we're dividing up, you get, for argument's sake, the north field, and I get the south part of the field. Right? Or you could equally say, ata yain shebemakom ploni, v'ani yain but shebemakom ploni. Or I get the wine from this vat, you get the wine from that vat, whatever it is. Right? That's all going to work. Now, if you think it through for a second, this Mishnah is necessarily going to be relying on some level of Breira. Right? There's some level of Breira here. Because what's happening is, remember Breira, this is an important concept to get clear. Breira is, you're saying that now that we've divided things up, we're saying retroactively what was the division existed before. So in other words, it's a partnership and both own everything. And normally in Jewish law, a shutfus, a partnership, both partners own everything, not half and half. Both own it all. Well, I think the easiest way to think of it is in our modern day corporate fiction. You know, you're 50-50 partners. There's no concept that you know, you could draw a line where you're, you know, dividing the property in half. You both own it all 50%. So if that's the case, you wouldn't be able to do transactions with your assets that before they have proper frushes taken if you're a Neman. But here we're saying, assuming that it hadn't grown already too far, like a shlish, whatever, it's a technical point, then you could say, okay, we're going to divide our property up definitively, and then Breira will take into effect. It will say that retroactively, so you always, your 50% always was north, and my 50% always was the south. Here it's like retroactive. So you see Breira is coming to effect here a little bit for the first time and definitively here. But you can't say, lo yomar, lo, Mr. A can't say to his partner, Mr. B, tol ata chitim, you get the chitim, va'ani sorim, and I will take the barley. Tol ata yain, va'ani etel shemen, you get the wine, and I'll take the oil. That won't work, because that's taking it too far. In other words, it looks like a transaction. It's obviously a barter going on over here. If it's just, you know, we have some sort of like numinous undefined share in this wheat field, so then we're drawing a line saying you get the north, I get the south. The rabbis didn't think that didn't look like you're really doing a transaction of trading, right? Even though, like, if you think about it, you see the lum this is, you are trading, you're making an exchange, like we explained yesterday at length, in a confusing length, I think. But really, to the eyeball, it looks like they share the field. Good, he gets half the field, so he took the northern half. Like, doesn't look like there's a swap. But if we say, okay, you're getting the wheat, I'm getting the barley, so then anyone who has any head on the shoulders realizes if they own both equally now, obviously they're trading. He's trading half his portion of wheat for the other person's portion of barley. Okay, so that you can't do because the rabbi didn't like what looks like a transaction regarding Tevel before taking off rushes. Right? Not so complicated. Okay? Now just the side point was, once it's grown a third of the way in the field, forget it, doesn't matter, okay? So now, good, Mishnah test. Okay, now, the same kind of theme, you're dealing here with Chavar v'am ha'aretz. You have a Chavar and am ha'aretz. He's a nem on the Taurus ve'ein tzorach lomar l'maitres. I'm not sure what. Yeah, he's a nem on. I don't know why I did that. Oh, I know why it did. Of course I know why they did that. No, it means a chaver. And yes, of course, a neman also. We'll see why.
He's both.
He's a chaver, so it's both. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. A chaver v'am ha'aretz, shigarshu es avim am ha'aretz. The two children, one is a chaver, one's am ha'aretz, and they inherit from their father who is an am ha'aretz. So, yachal hu lomar lo, the chaver can say to his brother, the am ha'aretz, Tol ata chitim shebemakom ploni vani chitim shebemakom ploni. You know, you get this wheat and I get that wheat. Ata yain shebemakom ploni vani yain shebemakom ploni. You get this wine, I get that wine. The same case as before, right? There's no real great chiddush here, okay, at all. It's the same principle, but they were building up to something different here. Okay, so there's their partners, and the same thing. Oval lo yomar lo, but he cannot say tol ata chitim vani saorim. He can't say, like we said before, you get the wheat and I get the barley and the split, because that looks like a transaction involving tevel. He also cannot say you get the lach and I get the yavish. That means, we keep on saying lach and yavish literally mean wet and dry, but it means that which was hukshel kabel tuma and that which wasn't hukshel kabel tuma. Lach had been wet and it could receive tuma, and the yavish hasn't. So even though that's not, like, if you're an onlooker, they look the same, because they're just grapes and grapes, right? Now, it's not clear what happened in the history of the grape, but since halachi, they're so distinct, they're considered like two minim, and they will consider that as more like chitim and tzorim than like north and south parts of the chitim field, okay? So you can't, the chaver can't do that transaction. And here it's even worse. If you remember, the chaver isn't allowed to sell lach to an amaretz, right? Because he's going to become tamei. We're going in that world. So he would be basically doing a transaction. He can't give it to him, and he can't also buy it from him, right? If he can't give it to him because it'll become tamei, he can't buy it from him because maybe it became tamei already. So it won't work. The brother will be stuck not being able to get the lach from the well. The chaver will be stuck not having a way to get the lach from his brother the amaretz. Okay, straightforward.
So that's the purpose of this mishnah.
The last piece. That's right, exactly. The rush, once you even take the first part out, it's very repetitive. But anyways, okay, good. Okay, mishnah yod. So this needs some background. First of all, when it comes to things that are used for avodah zarah, so those things have an isser hana on them. Isser hana means not just that you can't use them or can't be involved with them. Any benefit at all from them is forbidden. Okay, like for example, chametz on Pesach, right? Or basar b'chalo. It's uncommon. In other words, just to illustrate the point, the difference. If you ended up with pork chops in your refrigerator, whoever got there, it's forbidden to eat them, of course, right? It's asar, right? But you could feed it to your dog. You could sell it to non-Jew, because there's no isser hana on pork. It's just isser achila. It's for prohibition on eating it, not a prohibition on benefiting from it. But basar b'chalav, milk and meat cooked together, is asr b'hana, like chametz on Pesach, and you can't feed it to your dog even. Because if you feed your chametz to your dog on Pesach, or you feed your basar b'chalav to your dog any day of the week, really what you're doing is you're saving on your grocery bill, because now you don't have to buy your puppy chow. So because of that, you're benefiting indirectly. And that is forbidden. So when it comes to a thing that's used for avodah zarah, so it's asr bahana, no benefit allowed at all. And there's a separate mitzvah actually to destroy something that was used for idol worship. It has to be destroyed. Fine. Now, there's a related din called yayin nesach. Yayin nesach, yayin is wine. Nesach means like poured out, like a libation. So if wine was poured in front of an idol, and part of the service of the idol, so that wine has the status of something that was used to serve a avodah zarah, and it has also isser hana on it. You're not allowed to get any benefit from it. You wouldn't need to destroy it, but you are prohibited from any benefit from it. Fine. Now there's a new thing. Wine that was touched by a non-Jew. I'm sure you're familiar with this phenomenon. That's not called the Yayin Nesach, because it wasn't, no Jew didn't serve it to his idol, he just happened
moved.
To...
Okay?
Is that true? Okay, I don't know. I don't know if it's on the moving or on the touching. But non-Jewish wine that was produced in a non-Jewish winery that had both, obviously. So that is called Stam Yenam. It's like not, it's not Yain Nesach, it's just non-Jewish wine. And the rabbis didn't want us to hang around with their daughters, so they said their wine's off limits, right? And and even if they touch our wine or move our wine, it becomes forbidden to us. And as is not so uncommon in rabbinic enactments, they didn't want to make, you know, as you have now seen, every bit of Torah, once you start making a new rule, there's a million what-ifs, and then you have to whole make a whole new, you know, a whole new mesechta on each little thing. So they don't want to have a whole mesechta on Yain Nesach, on Stam Yenam, I should say, on non-Jewish wine. It's a whole, you know, they don't want... So they made it very simple. They said, whatever applies, we already dealt with Yain Nesach at length elsewhere, so whatever applies to Yain Nesach, really idolatrous wine, that's, you know, rabbinically, non-Jewish wine is the same dinim, same thing. That made it very simple on everyone, in terms of not having to innovate lots of halachas. But also makes... Now it makes Yain Stam Yenam, non-Jewish wine, like very, very chumrily, yeah, forbidden. It's forbidden. Okay, it's forbidden even to get any benefit from. Right, which is a... So, it's only midder rabbanan. Okay, fine. That's the one say, and that's... And then you there's lurking issues about non-Shomer Shabbos Jews.
Yeah, somebody
but don't worry
you
about
a
that.
Bottle of, in business, somebody gave you a bottle of non-kosher wine, and throw it away. You can't give it to another goy.
That's a separate issue. No, there is possibly a love called losachanem. You can't give them gifts, but that's a different issue now for this minute. But you're asking about the.
Can't drink it.
You know what? I'm actually not sure. Now that you're asking me the halach lamais, I'm actually not sure. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll find out. We're gonna find out when I get back to you. Sounds very strict to me. But okay. Anyone know definitively?
Yeah.
We'll find out. Okay. Now, a second issue that you have to know about if you're a non-Jew, is that midor, when you convert to being Jewish, so you're born again. We invented the concept of being born again. You're born again for real, and your father is Abraham, Avraham Avinu, and your mother is Sarah Imenu. And just to illustrate the point, you're born again in as much as, for example, you don't have a mitzvah of kibud avim midoraisa anymore. So they're not your parents, right? You're in other halachas, like a, you start from scratch. A woman who has a vest, like, you know, she every 3 days she sees her menstrual cycle predictably. So then she is in this niskayera, she converts, she starts from scratch, because we say she's all new, everything brand new.
Wow.
Okay, isn't that amazing? It's brand new. All that's all midoraisa, midorabanan. They obviously they do on these things, but I'm just saying midoraisa. When you convert, you're really a new neshama, a new bria, a new creation altogether. Okay, and therefore, since your parents aren't your parents, so when your father dies, really he's not your father, and really midoraisa, the yerusha isn't yours. The inheritance isn't yours.
It's not.
Midoraisa, no, it's not. It's not your father. It's some random guy that died.
Even if he was a Yid.
So I'm going to tell you, midoraisa, a non-Jew converts to being Jewish, he doesn't inherit from his father. Because his biological father is not his father anymore, right? He inherits the legacy of Avraham Avinu, that's it.
He's asking an interesting question.
His
father was
Jewish,
the mother
wasn't. Doesn't
matter.
Let me hear the question.
He's a Jewish man, and now his kid finds out 10 years later that he's not really.
Oh, he's not Jewish. I have no idea how the Allah deals with non-Jews. I don't think they.
No, but the father
is Jewish, but the child's not Jewish.
Right.
Oh no, they're not connected. They're not connected.
Wow.
Not connected. In fact,
because he can leave it in the world.
Yeah, but you're saying, but no, he's quite a very simple question. If a person has a child when he's married to a non-Jew, and then the child converts to being Jewish and at birth, and they grow, they raise him up, right? So then, they're not Jew, not the father and son relationship. You could have yichud problems with your own. Maybe they say it's your daughter, they're not father and son. You know, I have a friend that married a non-Jew who then became a Gioris. So he has two boys. One of them is a lady, one of them is a ger. Yeah, because before the firstborn child was born to the mother when she wasn't Jewish. She had a reform conversion, so the child is a ger. And the second child was born after she converted, the child a Levi. Is that funny? Two brothers?
Cohen cannot marry a Yoris, but a Levi can marry a Yoris.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Okay, so.
This would obviously apply also to lineage, you know? So that if the biological father is a Kohen and he marries a non Jew, then the child, even if he converts, is not a Kohen.
That's right. Even if the mother did convert, a Kohen can't marry a convert. So if a Kohen marries a convert, the child also is what's called the halal. To be technical, can't be a Kohen, can't work as a Kohen. Okay. Yeah. So okay. So now back inside to that's the world we're talking about over here. So now, but the rabbis are afraid that if your father's rich, and you're a convert, you're gonna jump ship to get the booty. So they said, listen, fine, but the Rabbanim will let you inherit from your father. Okay? But
what's the problem for the father to say, I love you regardless and I'm giving you
Well, he's allowed to, but you're gonna see in a second here. Here's the critical difference. The way the rabbi set it up, when you're Yoresh as a Jew from your father, so it happens the minute the person dies, it becomes yours. It's a seamless transition. Okay, it's instantaneous. Whereas and everything passes on. Whereas the rabbis made it that it's non-instantaneous transaction, and the stuff that's asr bahana, things that are forbidden to get benefit from, if your father was a non-Jew, that doesn't pass on to you. In other words, for example, if your father is Jewish and he has a idol in his house, when you die, it becomes your idol. You're now obligated to destroy it. It's yours, in your possession. Every minute you have it, you're over that problem. Okay? But if your father is not Jewish and he's got an idol, when he dies, the idol never devolves into your assets, even if you're the only inheritor. The rabbis didn't stick it into your and make it your problem. That's very relevant for this Mishnah over here. Okay? Fine. Okay. Now, inside Mishnah Yod. Ger v'goy. You have two brothers. One's a ger. Right? He's a convert. And one's a goy. He's just didn't convert. He's a regular Gentile. Sheyarshu es aviam goy. And they inherit now from their father, the Gentile. So now, when that happens, yachol hu lomar. The Jew, ger, the convert, can say to his brother, tol ata avodah zarah v'ani mos. He says, you know what? Let's make a deal. You get the avodah zarah stuff, right? And remember, going back to your question about the wine, which I'm not sure about, to be honest, but you certainly if you were Jewish, and you couldn't sell that avodah zarah, you couldn't make a trade with it. Nothing, it has to be destroyed. But if you're not Jewish, if your father was not Jewish and you're a convert, so that the avodah zarah doesn't automatically become yours. So since it doesn't become yours, you can now make a trade. Because what the brother basically doing is he's giving you something. It's not yours to give, but he's giving you his other half. So you could say to him, you know what, you take a avodah zarah, which really was never yours in the first place, vani mos, and I'll take the money. If the brother agrees, well, he gets it midirabanan. Well, he'd only get half the money midirabanan. Now he's getting all the money midirabanan. They're two brothers.
In this case now, like you said, is with the father's rich.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be shy of the cloth.
All it needs is $2 and one idol to make this mission make sense.
No, I'm saying what you just said is not inherited the idol in the first place.
Yeah.
So then what's he saying? You take that.
The classic Jewish ingenuity. He's saying, listen, I want the $2, you keep the idol, and if he agrees, he agrees. You'll have to do that. Your non-Jewish brother thinks the idol is 100% yours. You're allowed
to.
No, it means it. No.
No, I'm not joking. Do avodah zarah about a wine touched by a goy?
Okay, it could equally work as if it would be yain nesach, that's true. Really a wine libation. I'm not sure about the rabbinic.
A lot of wine.
Yeah, whatever it is, a lot, a little bit. I don't know about the stam yinam. You know, no one has any thought that a regular wine that comes out of Napa Valley has been served to idols. That's not the issue. I'll find out about that. Okay, so similarly, ata yayin, now you take the wine, same problem here, vani peros, and I'll take the fruit. It works, right? And you can see again, really, there's a bit of, vim mishabol rishus hager, asar. Once he's taken possession of it, right? So then it's too late. If he did take possession of it. In other words, the brother said, here's the box that I left you, and you make a kinyan on it, and look at the box, and there was sitting the vodah zarah that you didn't want. It's yours. Now you have to get rid of it, and you can't trade it. Now you can't say, well, let's make a trade, because it's now become yours. Once it's yours, you can't make trades with it. Well, so we're not forcing you to take it. It doesn't get foisted upon you, but if you make a kinyan, you made a kinyan. Sorry? It's chal. It's chal. If you take it, you took it.
The problem is he has the
mitzvah. Then he has to destroy it, exactly. Yeah. Very good. Okay, good. Mishnah Yud Aleph here. Okay. So, this Mishnah deals with the area called Surya, which is very similar to Syria, both in its pronunciation and its in the boundaries. But here's the deal. So Surya in the Mishnah is basically more or less where Syria is today. The thing is that Surya, it's a technical, very technical issue. When the Jews came into Eretz Israel, so Surya wasn't on the map necessarily as part of what was going to be conquered, but the Torah allows the borders of Israel to expand. If Israel conquers land, then the land expands with it, and the Kedusha expands with it also.
Just
yeah? Sorry? Yeah. So if they would expand, then they would spread the Kedusha with them. No, and you could have a Jewish imperialism. But the technical point here is that the person who conquered Surya was David HaMelech, and when he did it, they hadn't finished the kibush of Eretz Israel proper. So, Israel wasn't, fully founded yet, and they were extending the borders, which makes it a question if it's an extension of Israel, or if it's a kibush yachid, if it's one man, David HaMelech, expanding the borders unilaterally, which wouldn't have the power. Good, he can conquer what he wants, and it becomes our territory, but it doesn't become Eretz Yisrael. It becomes an annex, an occupied territory, if you will forgive the expression, right? But this would be a real a much more occupied. I mean, whatever, it's occupied l'shita sam, that it's not really Israel in terms of the halachic ramifications. Right? If you'll forgive
that. For practical purposes, that's much of Ramat HaGolan today.
Oh yeah.
Syria. Yeah.
There you go. So this. Yeah, the truth is from Chziv. Chziv, as we said, was yeah, that's right. Yeah. So good. So that's the issue with Surya. Now, even though Midoraisa, it's probably hasn't got this kedusha, but the rabbis extended it out to Surya if you treat it like Eretz Yisrael and many things, and beyond. Now, in Surya itself, so most of the produce comes from outside, from Chutz La'aretz. That is the rove comes from Chutz La'aretz, and therefore, of course, you wouldn't need to be mafreshit because most of it comes from Chutz La'aretz. Produce that grew inside of Surya, which is a miyut, which is a minority, needs to be tithed midur rabbanan. Okay? So now, the issue is going to be demai in Surya. If you have a regular, I'm just bringing out the mission outside first. If you have a regular person who's got a stall and he's an Amma'aretz sitting in Surya selling produce, you'll assume the Surya, the produce probably came from Chutz La'aretz, and it's pater from Hafrashas anyways. And so this guy's an Amma'aretz, and it's would be demai, but so what? It's fruit that is exempt, and as we saw in the first parak, fruit that comes from outside of Eretz Yisrael is exempt. If it's demai, it's exempt. Okay, but if you know for certain it grew in Surya, if you knew that, so then you would have to give Hafrashas Midrabanan on it. That's okay. Now you're gonna see. So we're gonna see in a second year concept. Well, I'll show you inside. Okay, fine. Important, beautiful concept. So first of all, Hamocha Paris Basuria, if a guy, this is the case I told you, a guy is selling his fruit sitting in Surya, and he says, Mishal Yisrael Hen, if he says, these produce come from Israel. So now, Chayv La'aser. Now you have an obligation to be Mafreshit, because he told you it came from Israel, so of course, has the proper dinim, and if it's Arts, it's the Mai, you have to do it. If he tells you, however, they came from Israel, and mu'usarin hen, but don't worry, they've been tithed. Ne'eman, he's believed, which is very good. It's like an earthquake, right? All of a sudden, you've got an Eino Ne'eman, a regular Amaretz, who's being believed. The reason why is because she'a pesha aser hu'a pesha hiter. And this is a very ubiquitous, it's all over Shas. This concept literally it means the mouth that forbade it is the very same mouth that permitted it. What does that mean? It means the only reason that you know that this food should need to get tithed is because this guy told you. If he wouldn't have opened his mouth, then you wouldn't have to have tithed it because you'd assume it came from Chutz Laretz. He told you it came from Israel, so he's the one who made it obligated. So he has the same power to say, and you know, don't worry, it doesn't need to be tithed, then you can rely on that. The mouth that caused the problem, the Isser mouth, is also the same mouth that is the Matir mouth, the permitting mouth. How that works, just the Kitzur Maisa, is either one of two possibilities. A bit of Lundus here for a second. One possibility is, we say in general, a person who makes an obligation that has only got the strength of his words, nothing else makes obligation there besides his words, so if his words are taken away, he has the power with his words to take them away. But which you'll see in a second has relevance. But if all that holds up the obligation is because he said so then he has the same verbal power to undo what he said. Or to, not undo, but to override. The other possibility is called amigo. Amigo means, and we've seen it already a couple times, since. In other words, since I didn't have to open my mouth, and he would have believed me, so now that I open my mouth, you better still believe me. Right? Amigo. Since he didn't have to tell you anything, and nothing would have happened. You would have not done hafrashas. Since I told you, and you're believing that, I didn't have to tell you, believe me when I tell you that it's been maaseh. Okay? So that's a pesha asa. If he says, Mishalihain, he says, it's my property, Chayv La'aser, then you have an obligation to be, he says that he has some field in Syria, he's a Syria seller, so he says they came from my field in Syria, so then you have to, and the assumption would have been it came from Chutz of Syria, Chutz Laretz. If he says it's from him, meaning from his field in Syria, so then Chayv La'aser. If he says, yes, they're mine, they grew in Syria locally, however, Musarnhen, but I took the Afrashas, Neman, same reason, Shepesha Aser, Hu Pesha Hitter. However, Vim Yadua, but if it's known, Shiyeshto Sada Achas Basuria, if it's known already that this guy has some field, even one field of his many fields in Syria, so now Chayv La'aser, now he doesn't have a Pesha Aser anymore. Because it wasn't his, in this first shot I gave you, it wasn't his words alone that made this thing possibly chayv and maestros. It was from outside information. So now he's not empowered with the same words to undo that obligation. Right? So since everyone knows this guy, or even some people know that this guy has a field in Syria, even one of his fields, so now he's not being the pesha asar. It's that information that's looming out there that's the pesha asar, making obligated in tithes, so he can't now be the pesha hitter and say no tithes are necessary.
Is the fruit seller, this guy, fruit seller in Syria, Jewish?
Yeah. Yeah. Presumably, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's Jewish. Sorry. Okay, right. The Migo also wouldn't work because Migo doesn't apply. Since I didn't have to tell you, the answer is, well, if you wouldn't have told me, I'd have known anyways that you have a field here, so it doesn't apply. Okay, so that's the Migo. Beautiful. Okay, now this next Mishnah, I'm going to say it twice. There's basically a basic two pshatim. The Rav brings down the two pshatim, like two different stories happening here in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Not such a common case. It happens like that. But the Bavli and the Yerushalmi have the actual plot is different. So I'm going to say it twice. First, I'll say it according to the Bavli. Your base here, it says, Am Ha'aretz, you have an, this story. The story is you have an Am Ha'aretz and a Chaver and their friends. And the Chaver is on his way to market to go shopping for himself. And the Am Ha'aretz says to him, now inside, Am Ha'aretz Sha'amar L'Chaver, the Am Ha'aretz says to his friend the Chaver, oh, you're going to buy something, you're going to buy vegetables, so kachli agudas yark, so buy me one also. Or kachli gluska in achas, or buy me, you're going to bread, so buy me a loaf also. So then, the chaver is going to go to the shop, he can be lokeach stam, he can just say baker, because the baker's, and the baker gives him two loaves, and then, when he comes to his friend, he gives the amart, he'll give him one of his loaves, and he's pater from taking hafrashas. How that's going to work? It's going to work in a concept called Breira. Here we go, Breira, no way around it, okay? Breira is, remember, retroactive assignment. So we're saying whatever a loaf ends up in the Am Ha'aretz's hand, we'll say that was a loaf that was always destined for him since he took it out of the baker's hand, and the chaver never took possession of it. Since he never took possession of it, remember, for example, if you see fruit on the side of the road, you can pick it up and put it aside. If he didn't take possession of it, then he has no obligation to do the hafrashas. So he's basically just the delivery boy. He delivers the untithed food to the amart, and the chaver doesn't have an obligation to tithe before that out of his hands. Because to say, he never was in his hands halachically, he never owned it.
Can you say the principle that the shliach takes the din of the shaleach? Therefore, the whole time that he's been with Shliach, but he's in possession of the Mishaleach.
That's what's happening right now. He's basically just a hand for the Mishaleach. So he's the Amar, it's his hand.
No,
so the reason why Breira is coming in here is because he basically opened his bag and put two loaves in. Now one of those loaves are the Amaretz and one is the Chaver. Which is which? Undefined. And then he pulls one out of the bag. So maybe you'd say, well, maybe that was the one that was meant to be for the Chaver, which is maybe he's giving him his loaf. The answer is it was undefined, so Breira will retroactively define it for you. That the one that he got, the Amaretz got. Potentially untied, yeah. Even if they are untied, that's right. Even if they're untied.
That's what
we can reserve. Right. And the chaver will either untithed or they're demai. Yeah. Which means maybe tithe, maybe not tithe. The point is
But they might not even be demai.
Demai means we don't know. Tevel means untithed, demai yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. They might be they could be tevel. Yeah, either way. Okay. Not a problem. Not a problem on the chaver to do the hafrasha. Okay. I mean, they are demai by definition. It's just that klapei shemaya, they may be tevel. Yeah. Okay. Good. Now that's the Bavli way of going it, and the Mishnah then continues on. So it says, "Vim amar," and if the guy said sheli zu v'zu shel chaveri, if he said when he picked up the loaves, he looked at him and thought he'd be a nice guy and give his friend the better cooked loaf. I don't know. That's he decided it doesn't. That's he just said. Good. This one, the one on my right hand is for my friend. The one on the left hand is for me because he said it and put it in the bag. And now they got mixed up. Venis avru. They got mixed up in the bag. Chayv la'aser. Now he'll have to give hafrash before he gives it to his friend because there's no such thing as brera when you defined it already. Right? When you've defined this brera was like I didn't say which one it is. So whichever one will be. But once I've said I'm acquiring this for me and this is now his. Even though I'm not acquiring it, but maybe what I'm giving him is the one that was taken from me and I did acquire mine. So Chavar has to be Ma'asar, but he took his possession. Afilo hin mea, even if there are 100 loaves in the bag and only one of the loaves are his, he'll have to. Sorry. The case is, even if there are 100 loaves in the bag and only one was from the Ma'aretz, he'll have to be Ma'afresh. No. That's also true, but the bigger chiddush should be, even if 99 loaves are the Chavar's, which is a bigger Kiddush? Yes, he'll have to take a fresh on all of them. Yeah. Either way, if there's 100 loaves, it doesn't matter what's the breakdown.
Rab says 100 of the Amarats.
Yeah, even if it's an Amarat, even 100 of the Amarats. Even. Let's say I'll take 100 of freshes. But, yeah.
Fine. What about the halacha that a chaver is not allowed to give it to an Amarat without meisering it first?
So that's our case here. If he didn't.
But it says it's butter.
He's pater because he never took it. He never it was never the chaver's in the first place. So yeah. So that's the Bavli's case. And it's straightforward, right? Straightforward. Okay.